Okay, Lamar, I have a question for you.
I love answering questions, so let's do it.
Okay. What was NASA before it was NASA?
What was NASA before it was NASA?
Yeah, like what was it called before it was called NASA? And or part two, if you don't know that, I'll give you a half a point if you know what NASA actually stands for. No Googling.
Okay. I don't think I'm going to be able to answer either of these questions because, as we know, I'm kind of an idiot. But before NASA was NASA, I'm going to say that they were a toaster company. Mrs. Johnson's Toasters, Inc. That's my guess. And I assume
we went from that to shooting people into space. I love it. The progression.
It's priorities. You got to beat the Russians. So, yeah. No time to worry about toasters.
Exactly. The Russians can have their toast. We got to get to space.
And I know some of the, okay, National Aerospace Association. Am I Ooh, close?
So close. You got, I mean, you got the national part, right?
So, you're so close. Doing, so close. So close.
Okay. So NASA before NASA was actually NACA, which is the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics. Mm-hmm. And then it became NASA, which is actually when Katherine Johnson was there, which we'll get into. And NASA stands for National Aeronautics and Space Administration, if you didn't already know. And I'm about to spit some nerd on you for a hot minute. Are you ready?
I'm so excited to be spit on.
Let's go.
Those are words that I never thought would come out of my mouth, but put them in my obituary, please.
Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lamar.
And this is our final installment where we are featuring Black filmmakers in the honorary month of Juneteenth. I say in the month because we're past Juneteenth now, but we've been celebrating all month. And this is our last installment with, drumroll please, Hidden Figures.
Okay. Yes. It's cool that we were able in 4 weeks to not just feature Black filmmakers, but we had an LGBTQ plus film last week. We have a female centric true story this week. So we got a lot of variety in there. I also, when we were brainstorming, I told Mackenzie, I was like, you know, we want variety and we wanted to have a fun Marvel film, but also some poignant ones. I also thought maybe next year we could do like a really shitty film, just to say again, we appreciate all, you know, contributions
there
of Black
are
directors
shitty
and Black
filmmakers yeah. of all types.
Yeah.
Let's share
so maybe
them
next year we do a bad one. Like maybe we could watch all the Soul Planes. I don't know how many there are, but
it's so true. We did do a healthy mix. And we also, if you didn't notice or catch it, we had a new mix of directors, writers, actors. Like it was a healthy mix of filmmakers yeah. of all types yeah. too. So yes, also very proud of that. Well, before we get in our last one, like we said, we're going to feature some women today, which we're excited about. Bad Bitches in Real Life and also the actors themselves. But what are we drinking today?
Well, we're drinking a concoction that you and Skylar came up with, and I believe you got to give it a name, which is great. And this is two parts gin, one part lime, half a part of simple syrup, one part strawberry puree. And then I also threw some Aperol in there at your suggestion. You said it. You said mm-hmm. something about spiciness or adding a little, you know, just because. Like, I forget
for
the word.
Funsies.
For funsies.
We said yeah, for funsies.
Yeah. Yeah. So I threw some of that in there as well. And it's very tasty. But what is this called again, Mackenzie?
The Full Moon Rising, which has a twofold reference here, not only for the movie, which is obviously about the moon race, the space race, but also because we here in Texas just celebrated the strawberry full moon. And this drink is red for fun.
I couldn't see
it.
It was hidden behind a cloud. We didn't get
to
see
it. It was cloudy. It was cloudy, but it was supposed to be pretty and red. So
it's very tasty, though, and very, very strawberry as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Super sweet. Might have a headache tomorrow. We'll see.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers.
All righty. Well, we're going to dig into the basics here like we have been doing and trying to go faster. So I'm going to speed through here. But this
well,
is...
Well, really quick, before you jump into...
I love
into,
how he's like, you know what? We're not going to actually
down.
Go
we're
fast. We're going to slow
anything.
It down.
Yeah. Really quick, though. You said before we got on, you love this movie. So I know we're going to talk about it in detail. But just why do you love this film right off the top?
This movie just pulls at the heartstrings, I think, for a lot of reasons, both as a woman and as a nerd and, you know, as a person of color, minority, not Black, but just people who have been in these positions of not always having an example of what you can be when you grow up, so to speak, and all the opportunities there are, and also just some preconceived notions that have been around for way too long about women and what they're predisposed to do, right? And these are women at an age in the late 50s, early 60s, who are literally blazing the trail, you know, for themselves, but then for everyone after them. And it's just so admirable. And I'm so thankful. And I respect them so much and their brilliance and the work that they've done. And I just love that this movie, while way too late, is finally honoring these women in a way that's so powerful, so well done, and really pretty true to the story. There are a few moments, of course, for dramatic effect, but overall, these women absolutely did these things and achieved these things. And it's so inspirational. And I think they did a really good job honoring these women's stories.
Nice. Yeah, I wanted to hear that from you. And that's what I assumed. I feel like the more of a personal connection you can make with this film, whether that is as a woman, whether that is as a black woman or a minority, like any of those things, I feel like those personal ties definitely help. I, even though I'm half Puerto Rican, I'm very white. So like John Glenn, I connected Heck with him yeah. right away. I was like, that white man, I'm in there. But no.
Literally everybody likes John Glenn. Like, we're allowed to like white people too. It's okay.
Did they? I mean, is it a well-known fact that John Glenn was just a really good guy or something?
Yes.
Or did they sort of whitewash him? Because he walks right over and says hi to them and stuff right away, shakes their hands.
No, it's he's a good very, guy. Very true to form. He is notably, and we in Texas like grew up with the legend of John Glenn. It's a big deal here. Mm-hmm. You know, he was at NASA in Houston for a while. And yeah, and I actually met him, fun fact, when I was in elementary school. And I was super young. I don't really remember it, but I remember like, it's one of those things like you get told, like, you met John Glenn. It's kind of fun.
All right. Well, very cool. I was going to say, so Mackenzie's getting her chance to nerd out today, and I actually did something strange for me, which is I didn't really research too much. I watched this film, but I didn't look up a bunch of fun facts. So as you can tell already, I will be asking questions a lot today, Mackenzie, and I'm sure you're very excited about getting to nerd out and answer
yes.
them. My first question right here at the beginning is, did we actually go to space?
Wow.
I didn't look up if that was exaggerated for the film. Did America go to space?
Listen, that is a contentious topic, my friend. We did, in fact, go to space. But it's funny you bring that up because there actually is a movie about to come out right now. I don't know if you knew this. That
ScarJo.
Is about... Yeah, it's ScarJo yeah. and Channing Tatum, I believe,
mm-hmm.
who it's about the marketing campaign to basically sell the moon, so to speak. You know, the moon mission was a bit languishing. We kept getting our asses beat by the Russians, which like is way worse than they actually say in this film. So many things that they did that we didn't do. We just overshadow them because we did land on the moon first. But they did a lot of other big milestone moments that
first.
We never hit. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, Fly Me to the Moon is actually about that story of them coming up with backup footage to fake the moon landing should they need to. It was really, it's really funny. I'm actually excited to see it.
I did like that in this film. And I know that we are just going right into it. We haven't even covered the cast yet. But just connecting out of that is I like that when America loses a race, we just change the finish line. Like, we didn't win this, but that wasn't really what it's about. Let's go to the moon.
Right, you know? Right. We were always going to the moon. I don't know what you thought was happening, but we were clearly always going to the moon. Yeah, that's
this
totally
was the plan.
Our vibe.
This was the real race.
This was the real race the whole time. Yeah, they had a woman in space far before us. I want to say it was like, gosh, what was it? I think it was 63. They had a woman in space. They had dogs in space. They had, I want to say it was a rat in space, something like that. We put a monkey in space, but that was our first living creature in space was a monkey or chimpanzee rather.
Okay.
And, but yeah, we were after them on every single one of these steps.
We put a leprechaun into space and Jason Voorhees in space before the Russians did too. So we're doing great, everybody.
USA. We are. We're doing great. We did a good job. But yes, we did outshine them. And eventually, to long story longer, answer your point, yes, we did land on the moon, among other things.
You heard it here first, folks. We did go to space. So
we
okay, now
space.
We can get into this movie.
Oh, Okay, so if you didn't catch it, what we're doing today is Hidden Figures, which was done in 2016. So not that old, but almost 10 years. We're coming up on 10 years, older than I remembered. It felt newer than that to me, but 7.8 out of 10 on IMDb, which I feel like is pretty solid. And then on Rotten Tomatoes, we have 93% for critics and 93% for audience, which I think is a rare thing. How many times have we had that happen where it's the exact same rating?
Not often. And this is a film where it's a little paint by numbers, in my opinion. Like, yes, it's a true story and it hits, everything plays out exactly how you think it's going to. It is a feel good film, which for me personally, not my favorite style of film. So my rating might not align with that later. But for that style of movie, it is very enjoyable. Like, it's very touching. You come out of it with a really good feeling and also being educated. So I'll say the same thing I said with Moonlight last week of like, it is an important film. This film needed to be made to give some recognition where it's way past due. But yeah, I did enjoy it, but I don't think I'm going to be giving it a 93% in my rating, to be honest. Little teaser there.
Well, it's okay to be wrong. That's totally fine. No, I get what you're saying, especially if it's not your favorite genre. And I actually would agree, like, historically, those aren't always my favorite types of films, because sometimes they can be a little too, I don't know, extra. I don't know how to describe it, but sometimes they're a little too much. But I don't feel like they hit you over the head with it. With this one is, I think, maybe the difference for me. So yeah,
fair.
Totally hear you though. So real quick, director is Theodore Melfi, and he did St. Vincent and The Starling, which both are, I think, on Netflix if you want to watch them. And there aren't a lot of credits for him, but those are not super mainstream, I don't think. I mean, like,
I've never seen either of them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen them in passing. I have never actually watched either of them. They both seem, to your point, actually, to be a little bit sappy, a little bit of a sappier type of film. So that may be why.
He's got his vibe. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that's maybe his energy is what it is. But yeah, anyways, good stuff. We have a couple of writers on this one, partially because of source material, partially because of the film itself. So the film team was Allison Schroeder, who did Christopher Robin, which I have to go on record and say, do not watch. Like, not because I loved Christopher Robin and I love Winnie the Pooh and A.A. Milne and all that. Like, I'm looking at my bookshelf where it's right there. I love it all. But it is rough. That movie is rough. Like, I was sad. I was sad the whole time. And I was like,
you're saying don't watch it for the emotional impact?
Yes.
Or are you saying it's a bad film?
Emotional. It's too... I mean, I don't... I don't recommend it. It's like, there's no reprieve.
I would always rather watch a film with that sort of emotional impact that's going to make me feel some negative emotions, just because I think that's almost like cathartic for me. So I would almost rather watch a really sad film than a really happy film, to be honest.
I think my thing is like, I actually genuinely agree with you overall. I mean, if you looked at my wall of movies, it's a lot of heavier stuff. But I think the thing with Christopher Robin is like, it never let up. For me, I was just like, I couldn't take a breather, it felt like. So it was too much for me personally. Feel free to give it a shot. But she wrote that. And
she also did Mean Girls 2. So for everyone out there who loved the Mean Girls sequel in like 2010, this is, you know, same writer.
Exactly. And then Theodore Melfi, who again is our director. So he contributed to the script, sounds like, as well. But then also Margot Lee Shetterly is the source material. So this is based off of her book about these women. So cool stuff there for sure. I haven't read the book, but I should. I feel like a slacker. Our major cast and crew is pretty awesome. We have Taraj P. Henson coming in hot as Katherine Johnson, our lead here. She's done basically everything, but some of her key things are Hustle and Flow was a big one for her. Also, a lot of people probably know her recently from Empire, the TV series on Fox, which I watched a few seasons of, but I just kind of stopped watching TV, so I dropped off, but she was a badass in that. Also, she did the remake that just came out of The Color Purple. So,
okay,
did a really good job there. Octavia Spencer, who plays Dorothy Vaughn, who has also done, I feel like, friggin' everything, just awesome. But she's most well known for, I think, The Help more than anything else. But then Fruitvale Station. She did Ma, which if you haven't seen is actually a super creepy version of her and kind of fun to
watch. We were doing trivia and the video round, they show you little clips of the films, you have to name the movie, ruined the ending of Ma for me. So now I don't know if I want to watch. Yeah, they just showed like one of the final scenes. I was like, oh, okay, well, good to know how it ends.
Oh, yeah. Don't show the end clip. Yeah.
It's only, what, like 2 years old, that film? Maybe three? So like,
it's a little bit older than that, I think. Oh, really? But it isn't that old. It isn't that old, for sure. And it's just, it's her, like, she isn't in anything else, is what I would say. She's a very different character, and I think that's why it's fun. But she's also did Shape of Water, which was great, and then Zootopia. She's one of the voices in Zootopia. So she does lots of great things. Yeah. And then Janelle Monáe, who we have talked about already on the pod with Moonlight, obviously was in Moonlight. Glass Onion, we talked about as well. She also did Antebellum, but she's, you know, a badass in her own right, musician, artist, fashion icon, queen.
Literally. Have I ever told you that story of how I worked at Hot Topic? And
did
she perform? I literally told her. Loyal listeners will know that I told that story last week.
Also, fun fact, spoiler alert, in case you weren't aware, the Q mod was mine.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a little inside baseball. Well, no, actually, some of our listeners are probably from our job. So I figured that was you making fun of me on our companies. Basically, it's a meme channel in Slack, and Mackenzie was busting.
But y'all have heard how many times this man has mentioned Hot Topic on the pod alone. Imagine that double by work. And I tried actually to go find footage, and I was just too under the gun. I was actually going to make the video like snippets of you saying it and videos of you bringing it in. I just didn't have time. But it was hilarious because Hot Topic was mentioned at work and Lamar had to let us know that he was.
Well played. Well played. You mentioned Hot Topic. I used to work there. So we won't have that. Okay. Sorry. We can keep moving. I am slowing us down today.
It's fine. It's a lazy Sunday. You know, we're going to do it how we're going to do it. All right. Kevin Costner plays Al Harrison, who, fun fact, is actually an amalgamation of several people. In case you didn't know, he's not actually a real person. I mean, he is and he isn't. But he's an amalgamation of several characters from Back in the Space Race and director of this program. But he's done Yellowstone is one of the biggest things people know him for now. But, you know, The Postman, Dances with Wolves, Robin Hood, which was my first crush of Kevin Costner. I think we've talked about this on the pod. We'll move on. And then we also did Kirsten Dunst again, who we've had on the pod multiple times. She plays Miss Vivian Mitchell, obviously of Bring It On fame. But yeah,
she's doing her best Southern accent in this. I didn't love it, to be like, everybody, when they do a Southern accent, they have this tendency to like talk quieter in order to get that draw. Like they talk like they don't speak in their natural like level of speaking or keep their rate. They just, I don't know why everyone tends to do that, but she's doing her best in this. I'll just say she never had an appearance on Yellowstone. So I would have thought that Kevin Costner, if he liked her accent, would have thrown her on Yellowstone at some point.
It's a very different Southern. That's the other thing I was going to say is her accent is West Virginian. Well, it's supposed to be, because they're supposed to be at Langley in Virginia. And so
Okay.
She's actually not doing a very good Virginia Southern accent, which back in the day was in fact the South, but you know, very different now. So I think she went a little too South with her accent and didn't quite work. I agree. But yeah, she's done a bunch of stuff as we know, but we also have Mr. Jim Parsons, who plays another amalgamated character, Paul Stafford. He's supposed to be representative of a bunch of the men that she worked with on this program. And I literally didn't even look up anything else. Y'all know him from The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. Like, and spoilers, he doesn't say bazinga not once in this damn movie. So if that's your entire reason for watching it, you're going to be disappointed.
Do you know what I always think of when I picture him is the scene of him. And I didn't watch Big Bang Theory like religiously. I just seen a couple eps, but there's a meme of him that goes around where he like pats his head and like rubs his head and he goes, good brain. Have you ever seen that where he's like ready?
I haven't, but that just seems like the type of thing you would relate to.
He does so like nerdy shit all the time and he's like proud of his brain. I thought it was hilarious and also kind of ridiculous, to be fair. Mahershala Ali plays Colonel Jim Johnson, who, as we said, he's been in a couple things of ours that we talked about this month, Moonlight, Green Book, etc. We also have Aldis Hodge, who plays Levi Jackson. He's a little bit smaller character, but he does show up a couple of times. He's the husband, in case you didn't realize, of Janelle Monáe's character, and he's in Black Adam and One Night in Miami. And I mentioned that because One Night in Miami was a really groundbreaking film, and it had a really interesting cast, and it was very well reviewed, very well liked. So if you haven't seen it yet, definitely check it out. Maybe some point we'll do it on the pod. It wasn't actually my favorite, but it was groundbreaking in a lot of ways. So
what was that? One Night in Miami, you said?
One Night in Miami.
Okay. All right.
And then Glenn Powell closing us out, playing again, we said John Glenn. And I put on here for his list of things. I was like, everything lately.
I literally wrote down, he's in everything now. So he did this one movie 7 years ago. And this year, in 2024, he is in every fucking
movie. He's in fucking everything. He just did Hitman. He did Anyone But You. He was in Top Gun a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. He has Twisters about to come out. He's fucking in everything. And he, by the way, is an Austin, Texas native. So us Austin, Texas natives are very proud of this young man for going out and being super successful. I looked up his high school too, because I was like, hey, did I like ever run into him? But he was super north, totally different area of Austin. Okay. But we're around the same age, and he grew up in North Austin. So I was like, well, maybe I actually like met him, whatever, in passing. Mm-hmm. No, probably not. But yeah, he's gone on to do a lot of great things. He's worked with a lot of great Austin filmmakers like Richard Linklater, which is who he just did Hitman with, for example. So yeah, we're proud to have Glenn Powell mentioned, the first time on the pod.
I think so. That's your icebreaker right there. And if you ever decide to make a movie, he'll be in it because he's just in everything now. So
there you go. Exactly. Yeah. All right, Glenn, we shouted you out. Just do all the films and now come on the pod. How about that? I think that's the way to go. All right. And then finally, the score is Mr. Hans Zimmer, which is a fun one. Obviously, brilliant. And then we have a very quick plot summary. The story of a team of female African-American mathematicians who served a vital role in NASA during the early years of the U.S. space program, which is, again, concise, accurate, great. Anything
straight to the point. No, that's exactly what happens in this film. I can vouch for it. I watched it.
You watched it. You did great. You did your homework this time. All right. And then a quick production note. This was very successful. This had a $25 million budget, and it did $236 million.
Wow. So
very popular. Very well. And I'm not surprised. They did an awesome job. So question for you, sir. Do we need a spoiler-free section? What do you think?
I think we talked enough at the start before we even got into the cast and crew about sort of the highs of this film and also a couple minor critiques. So I think we can just jump right into spoiler territory if it's good with you.
I'm down. All right, kids, turn around. Don't drown. It's spoiler time.
Woohoo.
All right, my first note is that we are opening with ladies working on cars, and I'm already so happy.
Like, it was, to me, I liked how they immediately established these three women are distinct in their personalities, because I think the opening, it's Dorothy under the car working there. You have Catherine sitting in the car. She is like just deep in thought. And then you have Mary outside doing her makeup. So, and that's not by any means her only characteristic, but they do show them all to be distinct in this opening shot.
Yeah, totally. And Dorothy's just over there getting shit done. Which we love a Dorothy. She's like, I'll fucking figure it out. And she's the one who has some mechanical background, and it comes to be relevant later. And, you know, and she's figuring out what's wrong with the car. She's absolutely right, by the way, that it is the starter. And so it's just fun that she's like there working on the car right out of the gate. And then this cop, of course, sees them. And this is where I think it almost has to happen for you to immediately set the stage of, we have to understand where they are living and experiencing things in this era. And you kind of have to set the tone for, yes, these are strong, independent, very smart women with these societal situations that come up. And rather than having a sense of relief that maybe there's help coming, these women are not in a position to feel relieved. They are three Black women alone with a white cop coming their way, and they're nervous. Immediately nervous of, you know, hey, just calm down. There's no crime with being pulled over on the side of the road. And she's like, and I think it's Janelle Monáe's character who you realize, like, she's one of the more outspoken, very opinionated ones. Yeah. And she's like, yeah, but it's no crime to be Black either. She's kind of ready to come in hot, and you completely understand why. But
yeah, tell me if any of this sounds like something that still happens today, right? I mean, we talked about this in Do the Right Thing when the cops are driving by and it's like, there's no crime being committed, but there's just always this constant tension. And it's like, Black people and, you know, minorities in general have a reason to distrust police. It's not that every single cop out there is evil, but it's like, there is a reason why this happens, because you give people power and power corrupts. And then 100%. There are people who have hate in their heart that just, so I totally, during this, I was just like, ugh. Things don't change, do they? You know?
I mean, it's broken down while black. Like, the mm-hmm. reality of that is different for them versus anyone else, really, myself included. And so anyway, I do think this scene is really good at setting the tone for they can be strong and independent, but they still have these situations. And you see this interaction with the cop. It gets a little tense, gets a little heightened. But what you also see happen is that, again, to your point, all their character traits come out in that mm-hmm. Janelle's character is the one ready to kind of, Mary Jackson's ready to come in a little bit hot. And then Dorothy and Catherine both bring it down, right? And they kind of maneuver the guy a little bit. They sort of charm him and they flatter him and they talk about the space program and they let him go off on his little space, you know, rant, so to speak. And it gets them what they need, which is him to see them differently mm-hmm. in a way that is advantageous to them. And also doesn't end up with them in the back of his car. And not only that, he escorts them to work after she gets the car started, which is awesome. Great scene. And my favorite part is just her line of like, this is a God-ordained miracle. There are three black women in a car chasing a police officer in Virginia in 1961. Like, this is a miracle. And it's just, it's such a fun moment that is, in all actuality, probably not true, but it's a fun scene.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it turns out in 1960, it must have been a weird world in 1960s America where no matter how much you may discriminate and be hateful against people of different races, as Americans, we could all at least agree to hate the Russians, right? So they're just right. like, let's find a common enemy that we can hate with this guy, and then we can be on the same team. But I love how he starts like fangirling over the astronauts. Oh, you guys work yes. for NASA? Do you ever meet the astronaut? Like, it just feels like a little kid loving baseball players. I will say, this was one of the things in the first 30 to 40 minutes that irked me just a little bit, was I said that this is obviously a very heavy subject, but I thought in the first 30 to 40 minutes, there was almost a little too much levity in the, I mean, I get it that this is a changing world and characters like the Kirsten Dunst character, you know, they're passing over these women for promotions and things like that. So there's this like passive aggressive approach to still being a racist piece of shit, but you're not doing it as outwardly. So I get why that's not happening. But I almost thought like this moment with the cop, they establish a little bit of that, but it felt still a little light at the beginning. Even when she goes to the restroom and they have that thing where she has to walk all the way across, you know, the campus to use the restroom, it's almost played for laughs the first time around. And I didn't love that of her like walking through and like carrying her books. I felt like it was like trying to make it too light, where it's like, dude, this is a fucked up situation. And eventually 40, 30 minutes into the film, when they start really confronting the segregation piece, I think it's when Dorothy goes to the library, that scene when I think they start building into like, yes, this is a really messed up situation and they're much more upfront about it. But I just feel like they downplayed really what makes this movie important for the first half hour. That was my one critique at the beginning.
Yeah, I do see what you're saying. And it's funny that you took it that way. And I totally get that perspective. I kind of liked that it didn't start so heavy. Like I said, I thought that it was good that it gave us the lay of the land, that there are real threats here for them and for Black people in general, and things that they have every reason to be afraid of, while not letting it immediately go all the way there. You know, I did kind of like that, but I do like that, as you said, it gets more and more prevalent throughout. You see how they are treated. You see the limitations that they have, not only as women, but as Black women. And it's a problem. It's presented as a problem. But it's funny you say that about the bathroom thing, because I hadn't thought about it that way, but you're right. It kind of is a little zany score behind it.
Like, I'm just like, why are we playing this way? I get that they're
trying
to show.
It's super not okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And at the same time, you are establishing, you know, Catherine is a worker and she is, you know, to put it metaphorically, like burning the midnight oil. She's putting in more work because she knows she has to in order to stand out at her job. So she's bringing all this work with her to the restroom across campus to continue working. That I understand you're establishing, but I didn't love the score being played. And it's sort of like, oh, isn't this wacky that she's having to walk a half mile to use the restroom, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, again, like now that you pointed it out, I'm like, because I definitely had the reaction of like, this is not okay. But you're right. It is presented in this way that kind of makes it feel funny, silly, whatever.
Yeah. She gets the monologue later that
yeah.
goes into how frustrating that is. So I do think that that becomes earned at some point and they sort of correct those wrongs. But it just says from a directing point of view, that just didn't sit right with me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I hear that totally. And I think too, like to present Katherine Johnson, I mean, just going down that rabbit hole a little bit, to present her as in any capacity, somewhat zany, which again, I know you're showing to show her as a workaholic where she's taking her work, but you know, she's running in heels. And like you said, the score and all this stuff, it does make her look a little zany. I think sort of undermines her utter brilliance, you know, to show her in that capacity is a little, it's not intentionally disrespectful, don't get me wrong, but I could see it like being on the line because this is a woman who graduated high school at 14 and college at 18 and is just truly a genius. Mm-hmm. And yeah, to present her in this kind of comic booky way for a hot minute is maybe not the vibe. I totally hear you. I agree. Yeah.
Cool.
But yeah, so we meet, speaking to Katherine Johnson's brilliance, right? So you see her and she's introduced to us as a NASA computer, which for the youngins out there used to be people. this is actually computing used to be manual. I know that sounds shocking. So actual mathematicians did this work, which I just, oh my God, I bowed before them. Mm-hmm. And she was one of them. She was brilliant. And she's in this pool of computers. And what I love about this introduction is that you have a room full of what? 30 Black women who are all brilliant in this same way. And I think that's awesome. So she's the smartest of them, for sure. She's the genius in the room, but there are a ton of brilliant women in this room. And I think that's really cool. And it's cool that NASA was hiring them at that time, which again, nerding out, fun fact, NASA did actually desegregate in 58. So when it went from NACA to being NASA was 58. And it did desegregate at that time. So they were hiring Black women. Like, this is true. There were big computing groups. There were people of all colors. They did not have separate restrooms. So we'll get to that later. But they do have this hiring practice. They were hiring people that no one else was hiring, which again, the cop kind of makes a side insult, backhanded insult to them at the beginning as well. I didn't know they were hiring. And Dorothy interrupts, women?
Women.
Yeah, there are a lot of women working at NASA. So
it's almost like we should trust the smartest people in our society to sort of establish the rules as opposed, you know, trust the scientists and trust these geniuses as opposed to just, you know, people with money or people with the loudest voices. Just listen to what the smart people have to say, please.
Yeah. I mean, and quick sidebar there, just I'm not to get on a soapbox, but like there are some great quotes and I'm neglecting to remember who said it. I think it was Neil deGrasse Tyson who says this about our politicians is he said, where's the rest of the world when it talks about politicians? Why are they all lawyers? Why are they all lawyers and businessmen? Where is the rest of society? Where are the scientists? Where are the teachers? Where are the, you know, blue collar workers? Like, to be a truly representative government, you have to have the smartest people from all these walks of life because they are there, right? It doesn't matter if they're blue collar. It doesn't matter if they're a scientist or a teacher. There are brilliant and valuable members of society in all of these areas. And we should, we should listen to them. So anyway, I think this complements that very well.
Yeah, I totally agree. This is almost like, you know, politicians are just people who are very good at manipulation, for lack of a better term. Just, they're good public speakers. They're very convincing. Mm-hmm. Some of them do it for positive change. Some of them don't. But that is interesting that they all end up coming from similar backgrounds. And
NASA genius
might not be the best public speaker.
But think about it, like a Neil deGrasse Tyson is a great example, right? He is a very well-spoken scientist and he has gotten a lot of tension that way. It does not then mean that he is the only brilliant scientist, right? And so that's, I think it speaks to the different things that people have to bring to the table. And again, circling back to these women, they all have different strengths. You know, Dorothy is not going to be a Katherine Johnson. She's not going to be the genius who figures out the trajectory for John Glenn, but she is going to be the one who figures out the mechanics of a machine, right? Mm-hmm. And figures out how to organize and supervise her team and all these things. So these are all super important, valuable skills. And I love that from the jump, they show us all these different women with all these different skills that can all apply to this one common, awesome goal. I also like that they introduce Mr. Al Harrison, who again is an amalgamation of characters, one of whom was the director of the Space Task Force, but he is supposed to kind of be inclusive of a couple other folks. And he just comes off as a real gem at the start, if you ask me. I just love him. That's my first note. Harrison's a gem. He is here to get the fucking job done. You know, yeah. Like he just yeah. kind of doesn't care about anything else. And you hear and see all the reasons why. And like, I respect the shit out of it. Like they had a goal and he is single-minded in that goal, albeit not necessarily unreasonably so. Like, I don't think he's over the top. He's intense, but I don't know that he's over the top.
And
per
he's
se.
Being, I know he's a fictional character, like an amalgamation, but he's mm-hmm. being tasked with, you know, basically Cold War of just like, we want to beat them. This is how it's going to happen. So when you have that weight on your shoulders, that's the attitude you have to have of like motivating and yeah. driving for results without being a total dick about it, which that character does walk the line really well.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the best way to put it. I think he walks that line really well of I have all this pressure on me and the program on its whole is moving forward or not by my mm-hmm. leadership. And I've got to move these people forward. And they show a couple of the space program, quote unquote, failures that happen during this time and how mm-hmm. that increases the pressure, right? Sputnik gets up in the air, which if you didn't know is the satellite. We're then assuming that the Russians are watching us. And not only that, they're way ahead of us, right? Yeah. And then Gagarin gets up is the first man to get into space. Oh, another fun factoid. Do you know who our first man in space was?
John Glenn.
No.
Al Harrison. I'm just going to go down the cast list. Characters. Dorothy Vaughn, first man in space.
Yes, Dorothy Vaughn should have been the first man in space. That would have been awesome. No, it's Alan Shepard. He's actually from New Hampshire.
Okay.
He doesn't orbit like John Glenn does. But anyways, so you see several of these quote unquote failures that then put more pressure on Al Harrison, right? Of like, I got to get this program going. And one of the tools that's supposed to help them do that is the IBM. Right. Which is like an existential threat also to all these women's jobs. Right. Mm-hmm. So what's really cool and like good and bad about this is that, you know, Katherine Johnson is in this space task force now. She's the only woman. She's a black woman. She's being isolated. She's not being treated well. She's being given a fucking colored coffee pot, which is bullshit. She's having to run across campus, as we just talked about, to just go to the restroom, to the segregated restroom. And Al Harrison just doesn't give a shit. He's like, I don't care who it is. I just want somebody to do the math. But mm-hmm. everyone else there cares, right? Everybody else is still stuck in the bullshit of segregation and racism and da 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 da. And I love the slow progression of people kind of starting to respect her and see her for the brilliant woman that she is. And I love that Al Harrison saw it right away, needed her right away. But it does take him a hot minute. And I do think we have to acknowledge that it takes him a hot minute to see that other people are not treating her that way, to see the treatment she is up against and the harder situation she is going through just to get her basic work done that the other men in the room are not experiencing. And I think that's her big challenge. And then Dorothy Vaughn's big challenge is that she's not being given a supervisor position, but she is doing supervisor work. But because of the IBM coming in, she can see the writing on the wall of mm-hmm. I'm not going to have a job if I don't make myself irreplaceable. And the best part of this is that she brings all these women with her. She's like, I'm going to learn it and I'm going to figure it out. And I'm still going to be the lead in here. And I'm going to, because I have the skills to do this and I should. But I'm also going to teach all these women how to program this machine. These are the first programmers, ladies and gentlemen. This is fucking cool. This is fucking cool that she teaches herself this language, which at the time was Fortran, by the way. First programming language that they used at NASA. She comes in, she learns it, and then she teaches it to 30 other women and gets them all jobs. Like, this is so fucking cool that she is leading the charge here. And simultaneously, they're doing this all together.
Yeah, I liked that approach of the film because I knew very little about the true story behind this. So going in, I assumed that these three women would all be doing the same jobs at NASA. They'd be in the same room for most of the film, and that's not how it works. I like that there's three distinct storylines happening, and they each have their own profession that they're sort of doing or pursuing in Janelle Monáe's case of like, you know, trying, what is it exactly that she's trying to get approval for?
So she's also a computer in the computer program at this time, but she is trying to become an engineer. She specifically wants to be an engineer, and she is actually being mentored by a scientist at NASA who is from Poland, who again is a fake name, but is based on a real scientist who was also Polish and was her actual mentor, who is trying to encourage her to become an engineer as well. And he's telling her, you can do it. And she's saying, I got to fight for it here. It's so much harder for me.
Okay. Yeah, I really liked how it's three different storylines interwoven. Mm-hmm. And they're still friends outside of work. I assume that part is true. But so they're still having these conversations and whatnot. But you really do get to see three distinct areas of NASA and three different sort of rooms and experiences and whatnot that are going on at the same time.
Yeah, she's doing Mercury 7 testing. So she's on permanent assignment to try and keep, just to give you context here, she's trying to help keep John Glenn from burning up in space. That's her job, right? Hmm. Her and that team are trying to test the Mercury 7 to the ends of the earth to keep it from burning up. She's changing the heat shield. She's helping change the material. You hear them talk about it. And he's mentoring her. And I think what's a really beautiful and healthy way of, he's not giving her the answer. He's treating her as a collaborator, and they're talking about it out loud. And she's suggesting to him, what about this? What about this? And I love her line back to him where he's encouraging her to go to school. And he's like, you need to be an engineer. An engineer's mind should be an engineer. And she pushes back that she can't do that here. She has no woman has been able to do this, yada, yada. And he says, if you were a man, wouldn't you want to become an engineer? And she's like, no, because I'd already be one. And I just love that mic drop.
There are some good, there's some really good, I won't even call them one-liners, but just really hot lines of dialogue that come out of these women's mouths that are like very, I would assume, empowering if I were a female watching this film. But as a man, I was just like, oh, yep. It's kind of like, not like a roast battle, but it's got that like, yeah, mic drop moment of like, oh shit, yep, she's right.
And I just love the faith that they have in both themselves and also in each other. And like, mm-hmm. when their faith is waning and maybe themselves, they have each other to then boost them back up. Because of course, this is a battle. Right? Like all of the things they're going through are battles, and you're going to have weak points, and they're going to feel strong and confident one minute and have a hard time the next, right? Like that's just real life. And I love that they are backing each other up through that. And I love the car scene too, to your point, just these fun lines where she's ordering them around. She's like, I sound like a supervisor, don't I? Like, and then Janelle Monáe's like, yeah, salty mean one. She's like, but yes, you know.
A different quote I was going to call in relation to what you were just talking about was, I like when Janelle Monáe's character is speaking about this struggle and she's just complaining. And, you know, she wants to be heard. But I love when Dorothy says to her, well, then petition the court, like fight for what you want. But we're playing cards right now.
But we're done hearing about it right now. Yeah, okay, can you calm down?
Do something about it. Yeah, I liked that of just like, they're friends. They're motivating each other. And sometimes a friend needs a good hard kick in the ass. So then go do something about it. Stop complaining about it. Let's play cards.
And Mary turns to Catherine and is like, have I been complaining about it? And Catherine's just like, for days. Like, we're done. Yeah, no. You see, anybody, I think, can see they're good friends in that scene and then those interactions, mm-hmm. for sure too. They're there for each other and they're badass. And they're there for each other's families. And yes, to your point/question, sort of, that was true. They did really come up together and stay friends. And I guess to me that's not super shocking, right? Like you have very few allies in this context, right? Like you would want these people on your side. So another great person that I feel like we do need to spend a quick minute on is Katherine Johnson's husband. So she was Katherine Roble at the start of this, if you didn't notice, but her husband over the course of this film is Colonel Jim Johnson. They meet during this film. And he's a real gem in that he was in the, I want to say it was Marine Corps or Air Force. I can't remember in real life what it was, but anyway, he meets her after she's been widowed and she's got her girls. And this is a true story. They met a little bit before this, actually, because I think this is supposed to be placed in 61, but a little bit before this. And he was really her rock through all this and was very supportive. But what I think is super funny is when they first meet, he puts his mouth in it right away.
I was going to say, I wrote down next my first note about this character was, or this person was, is this Mahershala Ali's like least smooth talker role that he's ever had? Like, he just seems like not super suave at all in this one, at least to start out with. But I thought that scene was pretty funny.
Yeah, I just love that, you know, everyone is setting them up. Everyone is like trying to, which is like, it's, you know, I don't know. I feel like that's so typical of that era too, of just like, you can't be unmarried for too long,
you can't
right?
Be
like
a single mother? How
can
you live?
A single mom? What are you doing? And so, yeah, so everyone's, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's Mahershala Ali. Like, he is a tall drink of water, to take Mary Jackson's words. I would sign up for that conversation.
Yeah,
right?
If he was in at a party that I was attending, I would ask him to come over and talk to any, I'd ask him to come talk to Janelle. I'm like, you can do better than me. Go date Mahershala Ali.
Do me a solid, get him in, right? Yeah, exactly. For sure. He can come talk to me anytime. But she's super nervous about it or whatever. But everyone's trying to push them together. They have this great initial conversation. But yeah, then he immediately, foot in mouth, is like, they let women handle all that stuff. And I just had to call him out, because what in the actual, I have it in all caps in my notes, sir. Like, sir. No.
Yeah.
And I just love her mic drop there, which if you have not heard, it is in the trailer. So if you've ever watched a trailer of this film, you have heard it. But she then gives him her resume, which is fucking impressive, right? And then she's like, and yes, NASA hires us. And it's not because we wear skirts. It's because we wear glasses. And then she pushes her glasses up. And it's so fucking cute. And it's such a great mic drop. And I'm sure that's not how it was said, but I don't give a shit. It's just one of those great moments in this movie. I also love another fun line at that time, too, where you see shortly thereafter they meet John Glenn, who, again, is a white man, white astronaut, comes over, talks to them. It's very nice, all the things. Mm-hmm. But Mary Jackson is like, he looked good. And they're like, I cannot believe you are crushing on this white man. And she's like, listen, it is equal rights. I have the right to see fine in every color. And I just love that. I'm like, yeah, he's fine. It's allowed. And then he's just a gem to them. So he gets even more adorable and attractive. And he really respects their role in the space program, no matter how small. And I love that they took time to show that about him, because again, that is, I think, his reputation definitely.
And I would assume, I mean, this is maybe a big assumption, but I would assume if anyone at NASA is going to be the most accepting of anyone out there, it's going to be the people that are actually the astronauts that are going into space. Their lives are literally in everyone's hands, so they
hopefully
are not going
to smart enough to
be a dick. Not to excuse how great of a guy John Glenn is, I'm just saying it probably comes at the territory of like, you have to respect everyone because your life is on the line.
I would think so. I mean, if this is a truly collaborative relationship that you have to have. You have to respect people on all sides of this. And I think what's fun is that that relationship and that initial interaction becomes really relevant later when they are actually trying to put him into orbit. And so you kind of see a few montages of them all going through their different processes. Mary Jackson gets her approval from the judge to take these night classes, which I think she does brilliantly, by the way, because she's, as we've said, she's the one who's willing to come in hot, be a little spicy, but she sells it to him, and not in a salesy way. She just finds the right angle of like, what are the things that you were successful at, that you were first at as a judge, et cetera. Like, I have to be the first, I have no choice. Mm-hmm. And she just pitches it in just the right way. And you see his reaction. He's like, damn, okay, night classes only. But I just love that she wins not by brute force in the situation, which is the way you think she's maybe going to handle it from how she's been shown to us so far. But this is a very catch more flies with honey situation. And she gets what she needs to go start taking these classes. Yeah.
Again, these are very smart women, not just, you know, book smart, but street smart of like how to communicate with people and arrive at the conclusion that you want, right? I also wanted to point out, I laughed. I had to like pause the screen because when they showed John Glenn, and I don't know what, I think they're all being interviewed, but it's him and the other astronauts sitting at like a table next to each other. And I went, so basically it's John Glenn and six not handsome astronauts. they put him in the middle. He's gorgeous. Glenn Powell. And it's a no offense to the other actors in this scene, but I'm just like, so it's John Glenn.
But they're
and these
not
other,
all a 10 out of 10. You know what I mean? Like, you definitely go to the middle there. That's for sure. Yeah. He's the lead astronaut in this film, as far as we're concerned. That's for sure. But yeah, other folks did get attempted missions before him, before he orbited as well. Fun fact. But I think one of the things too that's really cool is that you see them make these progressions, you know. So Mary's going to school, she's going to get her degree. Dorothy is learning the IBM, she's teaching other people. And then Catherine is figuring out this calculation that is so critical. And yeah. these men in the room are begrudgingly realizing how brilliant she is. But then she has that moment where, again, we're talking about mm-hmm. Al Harrison has tunnel vision. This is the mission. We are all focused on this mission. And all he notices is that once a day or twice a day, she's gone from her desk for 40 minutes at a time. And mm-hmm. he doesn't get it. You know, he's like, what the fuck? Like, this is what we're doing here. So he rips into her when she comes back in front of everybody else. And she's not the first. Like, he'll call you out is the point, right? So it's not yeah. discriminatory in that way, but he's pissed. And she gives the best monologue mm-hmm. where she has just cracked and basically tells him what for, of like, these are all the challenges that I have. I can't even drink from the same coffee pot as you guys. I can't find a bathroom within a mile. I've got to walk a half a mile both ways just to go to the restroom while carrying my work and doing as much work as you. And it dawns on him, which is, again, I think the flaw here, right? Like, he should have noticed some of this sooner.
Like you said, he's got the tunnel vision. So he is, maybe he's ignorant to these things are happening, but it is weird that he would wait this long to call her, like to ask, like, hey, what's that? And he could have done it in a better way than how he right. actually brought it up, right?
I think what's interesting about this scene to me is that it is so brave and she's so eloquent in this moment of rage, really. Mm-hmm. And sadness, I would imagine. She still stands her ground in this really beautiful way, I think. But I just wonder about the reality of saying something like that.
You know, if she would just be fired.
If she would just be fired on the spot, or like, yeah, being able to actually say that, even to somebody like him, who mm-hmm. I think she can tell. I mean, you can tell when you encounter people who are innately racist versus not, right? I mean, she is not being treated by him in the way that she's being treated by all these other people. But is it still a safe space to like scream at your yeah. boss? You still just screamed at your boss. You know what I mean?
You're making a good point of it is an incredible monologue. Do I think that that's actually what happened? Probably not. But I mean, prove me, maybe it's in the book. Maybe it legit is word for word. I don't know. But at this point in the film, I was still struggling with figuring out, because like I said, this film didn't, it's not a 10 out of 10 for me. It's very heartwarming. But at this yeah. point in the film, I didn't really see yet why this got nominated for multiple Academy Awards. Mm. It wasn't until this scene that I went, oh.
Because okay. her performance in the scene is yeah. incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I will also say, it can't be, even if she had a confrontation with her boss at NASA at any point, I didn't read about this, by the way, so I don't know that she did or didn't, but she can't have personally experienced this issue because it was desegregated. Like, she would not have had the experience of the bathroom thing. So I will just say, right. for asterisk, for dramatization purposes, this is a plot device. It didn't actually happen to her at this time in that way. That did not happen to her. But was she treated in these other ways? Potentially, right. that's maybe not clear. But yeah, it's a great monologue, though.
It is. It reminds me, and these are two very different films, clearly, but it reminds me of Cool Runnings when we talked about that and how it is a true story. But obviously, like, 80% of that film is, you know, dramatized or made up in some cases of, like, these things didn't actually happen. The core of the story did happen, but we're dressing it up. And again, that's why these are not always my favorite films, because, yes, it's a true story, but I know that it's still fiction at its core in some ways. And this scene is incredible, but yeah, I don't think that it would have happened that way. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think what's would be nice is if she had gotten that opportunity to just address the other issues in the room, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. be able to call out the people in the room and make them realize that, like, she's doing the same work as them, or yeah. doing work that they can't do, right? Like, how long did they look for somebody who could do analytical geometry, and they didn't have anybody on staff who could do it? She's coming in to fill a gap that they need. And this is how she's treated by her peers. And I do wish she had had that opportunity in real life in whatever capacity to make it known, like, I'm a part of this team. I'm important to this team. And I don't deserve to be treated this way.
Right. There's the two moments that spring out to me in regards to that are when she's being given the data and the reports to look over to validate that the numbers are correct, and they keep blacking out so much text on there.
Oh, my God.
You don't have security clearance.
Redaction,
you don't
see,
And he's not even saying bazinga. Again, downfall of this film. But, like, Jim Parsons is being a dick, his character. And I also love that this is before, apparently, NASA scientists knew that you could just see through marker by, like, holding it up to the light. It's like, she really is a genius. She knows. She knows how this works. But that scene, and then when she finally gets admitted into the room, like, the main table where they are discussing this with John Glenn, and I think that's where he develops even more of a trust in her, as she's probably the smartest person in this room, so I want my life in her hands, right?
Yeah. And I think that's a great scene to jump to, because that's a scene where she proves herself beyond just Al Harrison, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he has faith in her, but these other people don't really know her. These are all nameless folks, right? And even if her name has been on a piece of paper once, none of them know who this is. And she gets to get into this inner room and do the math for them in real time. That is fucking wild. And she does it to, like, I can't even remember. It's like four to six, maybe seven decimal points, right? Like, mm-hmm. the precision of the math that she's doing by hand on the fly is wild. And she blows everyone's mind in the room, including John Glenn. And so you do get to, I think it makes sense to jump to launch, right? Like, she gets to the point where they are putting him in orbit. And this is where they still are trying to confirm the numbers about mm-hmm. how he's going to re-enter, right? They're trying to calculate his trajectory back into the atmosphere so that he doesn't burn up and he can land in the Bahamas is the whole thing. And the IBM has come in hot, is doing all the calculations and recalculations every day. She's kind of been effectively replaced in that sense, which is a bummer, but she's still in the computing group. But John Glenn does ask, when the calculations do not match right before launch, basically, that she check it. And he specifically says, get the girl to check the numbers. And this is actually true. He did say the girl, and he did mean Katherine Johnson, and she does check the numbers. The only dramatization that they give it is that it's literally right before launch. Like, the implication is that same day, and we're staying on the ground if she doesn't check this number and it matches and what have you. But in real life, she was given a day and a half. So she was given enough notice, but doing the math took her a day and a half to check these numbers, like the full time, which
I think,
fucking insane.
Yeah. I also like that I don't know if this is actually how it was said in real life. Obviously, Catherine wasn't in the room, but that he just refers to her as the girl. I think that's like a term of endearment. And he doesn't, you know, he doesn't mention race or anything like that, but it's just like the girl. You know exactly who I'm talking about. That really smart one that knows how to crunch the numbers.
Yeah, everybody knows who I mean, like the girl, right? And yeah, I do think it's a term of endearment. I do think it's almost like, an honor is that she's known in this way, and that he asks for her. And that she gets it to like a couple more decimal points than the computer did. And that, again, is actually accurate and is part of the name of the movie. If you didn't know, it's called Hidden Figures for those hidden decimals that a calculator doesn't always get.
So it's like a double meaning. I get it.
Yeah. So it's like not only it's kind of a pun. Yeah. Or not pun. It is, to your point, it's a double meaning of it's for the women who are behind this, obviously, that have not been given the credit they deserve, but also the extra digits in that calculation that a computer doesn't always get and that they could get, that she could do manually in her head.
That makes sense. I did write down, and this is just, it's the downside of making films that are based on true stories, where we know it's like you lose a little bit of the suspense. So I wrote down in my notes, oh, geez, what's going to happen to John Glenn? Is he going to make it? You know, this is like, we obviously know how this plays out. So some of that drama of him being in space and like, it's like, oh, he went radio silent. Oh, no, it's just like, okay, we know how it plays out. So a little bit of that, but I can understand how future generations, there might be a time where people don't know who John Glenn is right away. So I think this movie will definitely be more suspenseful for the youngsters.
Yeah. And also, I think, unfortunately, it's easy to mix up a lot of astronauts in the space program, too,
who
did what. So I think even if you do like the space program, or you do know we landed on the moon or what have you, and you know Neil Armstrong, do you know anybody else, right? Like, so there's a lot of that maybe comes up here. And I do like that they do find a way to create a little suspense here still of you're not quite sure if they're going to take off on this day, which, to be fair, they show launch day that he actually launched at this time. But I think it was, I think they had tried, I want to say 7 times comes to mind. I could be wrong. Mm. Don't quote me, but they had tried multiple times for his launch as well. So there is some suspense of like, will this happen this time?
Got it. Okay. I was going to point out during that scene, for as much as it wasn't super suspenseful for me, that got me thinking about the visuals in this film. And I do think everything in the film looks great. The parts where he's flying through space and sort of like the atmosphere and stuff whipping by and you see like the flame. I think the visual stuff in those grandiose scenes are really cool, but I also, it feels authentic. Everything in here looks, you know, what did you say, 1962? It looks legit. It feels legit. For as sort of light as some parts can be, this does feel like it's taking place during that time period. And that was pretty cool to see. So I would almost argue that this might be a better, like more accurate NASA film than Armageddon was. I have to think about it. It might take a couple, I may need to sit on it for a couple weeks, but I think this might be a little more accurate than Armageddon.
Wow. 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 It hurts. It hurts my nerd heart. It really does. But no, I mean, all that to say, like, that is the climax. It's a big moment of the film. They launch him. They bring him back safely. She is directly involved. All of them are directly involved in the success of this mission. And they are the hidden figures of this mission. And they are brilliant, brilliant women. And then they proceed to tell us some of the rest of their story, you know, that Dorothy Vaughn was a supervisor there and did lead that team and did get the official title. And that Mary Jackson, you know, became an engineer. And she, I think, became the head of the engineering department in 1979. Like, she stayed with NASA for a long time. And then, of course, Katherine Johnson stays in NASA for years and years. And she actually now, if you didn't know, has a huge building at NASA named after her. It was a big dedication in her honor. She also was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Barack Obama a few years back, and obviously very deserving of that. And she was married to her husband and partner and champion of 60 years, Jim Johnson, as well. So they share all that at the end of the film.
I loved those, the real life images as well that they put there. Like, that's always a nice touch to see the them growing up and then to see the resemblance to the characters you just saw in the film. I liked that touch.
I did like that. I like that they're showing the real people, and they, like you said, they show the transition a little bit of like, here's what they look like in the movie, and then here's the real people. And I do really like that. And then one other gem that isn't mentioned in the film that I have to mention because I am obsessed is that she was awarded the Silver Snoopy Award, which is an award given at NASA from astronauts to team members who are instrumental in a mission, missions, etc. It's a, you know, kind of like peer-to-peer type of thing. And she was awarded the Silver Snoopy Award. And we're big fans of Snoopy in my family. So I do have a NASA Snoopy. I'm not going to lie to you. Obviously.
It's kind of like how in our company, they do President's Club for the bestsellers, but they get to bring
bring a person.
These are a couple of people that helped us to get here. They're not salespeople, but they're partner. Like, that feels like the same premise, right?
Cross-functional partners. Yes, is what we would call them in corporate America. But these guys get a little Snoopy, which I just love. And she got and was very deserving of. All that to say, I think she's a genius. They're all brilliant in their own right. It's a really cool film honoring these women who literally broke down barriers on behalf of women, on behalf of Black women and scientists, women in science, women in STEM. So I really love it. I think it's really enjoyable. It was so fun to rewatch for me. I haven't seen it in a hot minute and I was just geeking the whole time. So I had a great time. Anyway, all that to say, what's your rating?
Before I get to my rating, I want to point out one note that I wrote down that didn't really fit anywhere else in the discussion. At some point, and I want you to remember, I was 2 Negronis deep while I was watching this film for the first time. So just to preface.
Wait, was this your first watch time?
This is my first watch of this film.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's so fun. Yay.
So at this point in the film, I am 2 Negronis deep, and I don't even know what it's in reference to, but it's probably like 30 minutes from the end of the film. If anybody wants to know what I'm talking about.
I love an out of context note. Let's hear it.
But I wrote, fuck yeah, mechanical pencils. That's all I wrote.
Oh my God.
So
that is so, that checks out. Like, just who wouldn't cheer on a mechanical pencil to Negroni's deep? That is really cool. It's very supportive of it.
I was going to say, because I think they are referencing the fact that mechanical pencils were like a new thing then.
They were.
So, because they call attention to it, and he says, look, you just put the lead in, and then you click it, and blah, blah, blah. So they're making a point to, yeah, bring mechanical pencils back. They're so fucking cool. Anyway, my rating, as I said, I enjoyed the film. It is a touching, important, feel-good flick. It's not going to be one of my personal favorites. Like, it was worth a watch. I'm not going to rewatch it, I don't think. And because of a couple of the things that I said, I don't think their intention is to make light of any of the issues, but I expected it to be a little heavier, especially in the first act. Mm. But I think once the segregation and the issues they're dealing with take more of a forefront, you know, in the second act, that's when it gets really entertaining for me. And as I said, some of the suspense might get taken out, but it is always cool to see these behind the scenes stories of what was happening at this time when the rest of America was kind of ignorant to the situation. So again, important film, not one of my personal favorites, but I, you know, for a good time, want to feel good, watch, enjoyed it. I'd probably go like 7.5. Like, I know you're going to go higher than me. And I think that if I could connect more to the story, it would probably be a higher rating. I think as a white man, it's not going to be a personal favorite of mine. But yeah, 7.5 is where I would land, but still very much recommended.
Yeah, I think it's great. I hear you on what you wanted to see from it, and also what you probably just expected to see from it as well. So I get that. I think one of the things I like about this is that it is more of a celebration of Black lives and Black stories than mm-hmm. it is heavy, because I think it's one, it's that happens a lot, unfortunately, just by nature of experiences that are all too common in that community. And so it is easy to have films like that, not easy to do, but it is, there are more of them. And I like that this is one that acknowledges true advancements and successes and brilliance and celebrates those things. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you always get that opportunity to do that as often. So I do like that it does that here. I really enjoy it. But also, I will say a big part of my rating is also probably related to the fact that I'm a fucking nerd and I was just geeking out about NASA the
whole
time.
You really connect, yeah.
I really connect in that way, as a woman, as a, you know, nerd, whatever. I love NASA. So it's just really enjoyable for me.
Really quick, because you're talking about how nerdy you are, I wrote down the math formula she's doing at the very beginning when she's a child. And I thought, maybe you're smarter than me, but I came up with two potential answers. She says the answer is 3, I think. But I'm going to have to say, I will text you the actual, you know, formula, because I think the answer could also be 1.
Well, it's the quadratic equation, I know, is what she's doing at the very beginning. But I don't mm-hmm. remember the exact numbers involved. And she's trying to get to 0, you know.
Okay, yeah.
But I
somebody
don't
that's
know,
smarter
I don't
than me
the
out there,
number.
Crunch the numbers, because I think the answer could also be 1. But maybe I'm completely wrong.
Well, I think the point is that she's trying to get to 0 in that specific equation, but I could be wrong. I don't remember the exact equation, but yeah, no, math is not my strong suit. I used to love math, but as it got really advanced, I had a really terrible teacher and I didn't do great in math, but I do like it. I do enjoy it. And I do, like I said, I just love space and NASA and the universe and all this stuff. So all that to say, again, long-winded way of saying I would rate this like an 8.5. Super nice. Enjoyable for me to watch. And I think the performances are really solid and strong. So, yeah. All right, friends. Well, thanks for listening to me nerd out and Lamar ask dumb questions for about an hour. We did great, I think. So thanks for joining us. But come back next week for the beginning of our summer fun flicks, where we're going to kick off with the
Armageddon. Sandlot.
You're just trying to work in the Armageddon today. You're like lobbying.
I know that
we're
probably never going to watch Armageddon on the pod, so I want
to
get my.
To be honest, I don't think we are. I mean, I would have to get super outnumbered for that to happen. But yeah, but join us for the Sandlot, which we can all agree is worth a watch.
And are we going to have a special guest next week?
We might have a special guest. Stay tuned if you would like to find out. And in the meantime.
Yeah, follow us on our socials. We drink and we watch things. I think Instagram is where we're most active and we're trying to get a little more engagement going there. So give us a like, give us a subscribe. If you do listen to the pod and you've never rated us on whatever platform you're using, please make sure that you do that. That helps us to grow our audience and all that good stuff. And I think I got everything, Mackenzie. Is that right?
You did. You passed your test.
Awesome.
I will allow you to leave for the day. All right, kids, go have a drink. And watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers.